Hi, I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47, from the Ranger Command Power Hour and the Starfleet Escape Podcast. You're listening to another great Four-Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out foureyedradio.com. It's Morphin' Time!
Ay-ay-ay-ay-ay! It's the Ranger Command Power Hour!
Today on the Power Hour, episode 225, Ranger Command Comic Squadron Interview, MMPR and TMNT2 with Ryan Parrott, recorded on February 6, 2024. Welcome to the Ranger Command Power Hour on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. Summer Ranger up with your hosts. I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47.
I'm Rove, also known as Roll of the Queen.
I'm Tyler, also known as Tyler MC.
And I'm Dr. Ben. It's my bedtime. Who's going to tuck me in?
Today, we welcome back Ryan Parrott to the podcast. Ryan is best known in Ranger Nation as a writer of Boom Studios' Go-Go Power Rangers, My Morphin Power Rangers, both MMPR and TMNT miniseries, and Power Rangers Unlimited, The Morphin Masters. His other works include Aftershock's Dead Day, Image's ongoing Rogue Sun, and the upcoming The Infernals. Power Bunga, and welcome back to Ranger Command, Ryan.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we start, we did have a message from one of our other comic squadron who's in the UK, Callum. He's from the Lightning Collective podcast. He just wants to give you a big virtual sloppy kiss, and he'd do it himself if he could. So...
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to say thank you.
You do. Sometimes you just have to say thank you.
We asked listeners to ask some questions. So sprinkled throughout, there'll be some listener questions. And I specifically did not tag you so you wouldn't be flooded with these.
Well, to be fair, when you do that, I ask my own questions. So like, that's fine.
But we're definitely here to talk about the second MMPR and TMNT series. This series was originally published back in December 2022 through May 2023. The soft cover collection was released last September, and the black and white edition of the first issue was released on December 27th. So 6 months after the Teenagers with Attitude and Heroes in a Half Shell teamed up to defeat the unholy alliance of Rita Repulsa and Shredder, a new threat forces them to reunite. Unlikely alliances abound as the Rangers and Turtles put their heads together and create a secret weapon, but it might change them in ways they can't come back from. This is by Ryan Parrott, obviously, who's joining us right now, and the amazing artist for this series, Dan Mora. Holy crap.
Yeah, look at Ryan.
Ryan's like, whatever.
He's all right. I taught him everything he knows. But it's all. Been carrying that guy since Go-Go.
There it is. He only got to do Batman because of you.
I wish. That'd be amazing. He should have taken me with him. I'd be like, come on, man.
Before we continue, I just want to interject. What would a holy alliance look like? This is an unholy alliance. What's the holy alliance look like?
A holy alliance would probably be Splinter and Zordon in body form fighting with the neutrinos. That would be a cool holy alliance for me.
Okay.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Okay. Not bad for an off the cuff.
Yeah.
I like that.
Anytime I can drop the word neutrinos into a conversation,
sure. Yeah.
Ryan, I'm not the biggest turtle fan in the world. I had to Google the neutrinos after you name drop them in this in this series. And they're a couple of little weirdos.
They are.
They're really sick.
They're like synth wave elves. Like they look exactly like, yeah. They were so crazy. Like they were basically like 1950s space aliens into like flying cars and stuff on the TV show. And I was like, there's a way to reinvent them in like a really cool, fun way, which is what I was like 100% teeing up, because I was like, I want to figure out a way to bring them back in the stories at some point, because the neutrinos, man, they're awesome.
I would absolutely love to see them come in and be the new team to interact with the Turtles and the Rangers. But anyways, we're not here to talk about the theoretical TMNT MMPR 3.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
Or 4. Or 5.
Oh, God.
As many as we want you to come back for, we're here to talk about 2.
Ryan, I do have a little bit of a question for you. It's a follow-up to Morphin Masters, because I don't know if you know. I don't know if you know, homie, but there was a Pink Dino Thunder Ranger, that got on the timeline, and the timeline has been in cahoots. So I do want to ask you, was that just an Easter egg by Daniel, or are there any bigger hints to the greater multiverse?
To be clear, we're talking about social media timeline, not Power Ranger timeline.
I think I've responded to this twice and then immediately deleted both of my answers. So.
Oh.
Because I was like, I sound defensive. So, and somebody I think was like, you sound defensive. And I was like, you're right. And deleted it. but I mean, look, I could be a smart ass here and just be like, I don't know, maybe. But the reality is probably less cool, which is that, look, it's monthly comics. And I think mistakes happen and people stuff. But here's me being ultimate defensive, right? This is my only... I saw somebody, God, I'm so petty. I saw somebody was like,
this is the place to be.
This is why the comics aren't canon, because they make mistakes like this. And I literally wanted to turn to them and go, the Power Rangers on the TV show got the names of their own weapons and Zords wrong from time to time. So let's settle down with the whole, if you make a mistake, you're not canon approach. Okay. Like, I made a mistake. But
Tommy wore a Band-Aid for an entire episode.
Wait, that's right, he did.
Yep. That was weird.
I saw a TikTok the other day where Doggy Krueger called Sky the wrong name.
Yes.
In an episode. And they just kept it and kept rolling with it. So
yeah.
Yeah, don't they call, like, they call the Thunder Zord the they call the Thunder Megazord the Mega Thunder Zord. They get, there's a whole episode where they call their weapons different.
Like, names. The wrong thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, my favorite, like, one Kyle always loves to point out is, it's in the episode, it's like a two-parter. It's the one where they get the message from Tommy in the future.
Yes.
And if you watch in the second episode, they show the message again, but the message is different. Like, but they, it's not like a continuity. It wasn't like they were like, it's not part of the story. I think they just filmed it again and didn't bother to check the dialogue.
That reminds me of that one time where it was like, his name is Zane. He's my best friend. His name is Zane. He's a Silver Ranger. And the only thing that separates it is an ad break. And that's just like, it's so crazy.
It's weird. Yeah. So the answer to that is, you know, I think there's probably like, we, you know, sometimes you miss stuff. It goes pretty fast. I should be more detail-oriented about things. But, you know, please forgive me. I throw myself on the mercy of the Power Ranger court. Yeah.
It was a cool mistake, by the way. Dude, you do not have to apologize. It was a cool mistake. Not at all.
Watch, down the line, like, watch, Missy takes it and turns it into a plot thing, and then
then we have to pay $7.99 for a universe book or an unlimited book or whatever about Dino Thunder Pink.
Yeah.
Well, there's an Aberra Pink in Aberranger, the Sentai. Yeah. So you can just say it was that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep, there you go.
Yep, exactly. That's what it was.
The Morphin Matt.
There you go.
The emissary went to Japan.
Anybody has any more questions about the Dino Pink Ranger? Talk to Tyler for me. All right, everybody.
Yeah.
I got answers for everything. Are they right? Are they true? Doesn't matter.
Tyler,
I said it.
Don't tag Ryan.
So getting into the story a little bit, we had at Teddy Tendon wanted to know about the overall, not just the second part, but also the first part. Was the In Space crossover from the show, was that the original inspiration to do this project in the first place? And if not, what was it? And also, please tell him that I said hi. He's a massive fan of yours.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Hi. It wasn't, I'd seen it. Like, obviously, the best part about this In Space crossover is like, the memes were the first thing you ever saw. It was like,
the
Power Rangers. Yeah, like, it'd show up in your timeline and be like, who the hell, what? They're hanging out with the Power Rangers and the Turtles. Like, I was like, what is this? So you wouldn't track that down. But I was really excited about it when I found it and watched the episode and everything, because it's such a weird freaking episode to begin with. But I think the idea was always, from my perspective, I actually called, I was leaving GoGo, or we were ending GoGo, and I actually was like, I want to do more Power Rangers. And we hadn't figured out if I was going to take over Mighty Morphin or not. And so I was trying to come up with ideas of like, what could be a cool crossover. And I was like, why hasn't anybody done Turtles Rangers with this common group? So I actually called Daphna, my editor, on like, hey, like, I don't know what you guys are planning. And she, before we even got to pitch it, she was like, hey, so I'm sorry, we've kind of all locked up on projects right now. We have the crossover that we're doing right now, so we don't have, like, I'm not sure what you can do. And I'm like, what crossover? She's like, oh, we're doing a Turtles Rangers crossover. I was like, I was calling you to pitch that. And she was like, oh my God. She's like, do you want to do that? I go, I will chop off my left arm if you guys let me do that. Like, I will, like, please, for the love of God. And I got on the phone and I literally said, Green Ranger Shredder. That was the first thing that popped out of my throat. I just like, Green Ranger Shredder. That's my pitch. And she's like, I don't know what that means. I'm like, go look it up and we'll figure it out. And then, so that was where it all started. And then Bryce Carlson, who's big part of Boom, he is as big a Turtle Ranger fan as anybody, a Turtle fan as anybody. And so I called him, we started talking about it. So that's kind of where it came from. I think it was the inspiration of just loving. I mean, mm-hmm. I just love both of them so much. Like it makes so much sense. That crossover is so easy. I've always said this. I've said this in interviews before. Color-coded teenagers fighting henchmen who use monsters and an overlord. Like, it's the same story. I could be talking about both of them at the same time. Right. And so I was like, that was amazing. And I think also, I hate giving him credit because he's such a sweetheart, but James Tynan's Turtle Batman crossovers, all of them are so good that I was like, I got to try and write something that lives up to those. I don't know if I did, but I definitely tried. And like, so like, I think that was probably my inspiration a little bit, was like seeing those. And I was like, ooh, Batman, and that'd be fun. Like, you could do some really, I was like, I want to see Rita. And like, it's just like, the fun part was like, I just made a list of all the stuff I wanted to see in the crossover. It's like, it was, and that literally was the story. I was like, oh. I hope that answers the question. It was like the inspiration. Yeah, yes, I was aware of the episode. I'd seen it before. The best thing I can say about it is, and I'll stop because I had a lot of caffeine today. The best thing I can say is that what I loved about the fact that there had already been an in-canon crossover, or depending how you look at it, was that means I didn't have to spend any time in the miniseries explaining how these two people came into each other's world. I could just have them be a part of that world. And if you mm-hmm. notice in the first crossover, that's actually a huge part of the theme, which is
right.
They both are kind of like, oh, God, like the Rangers are sad because like they feel like they have to take on the world all the time. And you've got the Turtles over here who are like, we've been saving the world every weekend, but no one knows about it. And like, I thought that was such a neat thing that they were like, you could use that because they're in the same world together, thanks to the TV show.
I also love Donnie being a big Rangers fan. I thought that was very, very to character. I feel like Donnie's gone from more of like a tech nerd to like a media nerd in like a modern day. And that was very, very fitting.
Most tech nerds I know are media nerds. Like,
you're right.
If you're spending time building telescopes on the weekend, you probably like Star Wars. You know, you
probably got some Legos in your garage. Yeah,
exactly. Totally.
The Ninja Turtles have as huge of a rogues gallery as the Power Rangers. How did you go about picking some of the enemies, especially in this first issue, like the Rat King and Baxter Stockman, which were both great?
I picked the Rat King because he's my favorite Turtles villain. And I really, really wanted to see Dan draw him. And I was like, once again, like, this is how I write, guys. I just like, what do I want to see? And I was like, Green Ranger, Raphael, Rat King. There's a scene. I don't know what that scene is yet, but I want to see that. And I was not disappointed by Dan's weird zombie dark Rat King. I was so like, cool. I freaking loved it. Yeah. It's really funny because like this goes back to the first one as well. Like when we were first coming up with the Turtle Ranger crossovers, like my initial thought was that aesthetically this should be in line with the IDW run, that Shredder should be in the black and the red and the silver and all the Turtles and Rangers. Like I was like, we should stay in continuity with IDW. And it was actually Daphne and Bryce who were like, no. Like we can do our own thing here. It's like, let's riff off of the show and the visual style of the show. Cause I was like, purple ninjas, are we really going to be able to pull off that like without making it look ridiculous? Because I love the look of the Foot Clan in the IDW run. It looked amazing. If you guys haven't read the one where Splinter actually takes over the Foot Clan, that's like one of the coolest. It's such a great,
I'll have to read that.
Such a great storyline, because it's all about like, I've helped my boys, all these other kids just need a father figure that can lead them properly. And it's about like the best, and you know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions, and how it's such a great storyline. Anyway, but I love that Foot Clan version. And so I was like, we should do that. But they were the ones who were like, no, let's rip off the show. Let's find a way to modernize and just sort of change the style a little bit of that. And so that's why Shredder is, you know, the traditional purple and those things.
I'm sorry to interject, but I'm just thinking about like the video game Shredder's Revenge right now. And I'm just thinking about like how goofy it is to see like the Foot Clan. I don't know if anybody here has played the game.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I
like
the whole thing in a day with my nephew.
I'm friends with the composer. But I'm like looking at, I'm playing as like Leonardo, and I'm just bothering these like Foot Clan that are just like playing Game Boy in the background, and they're just like typing away on a, they're playing basketball, like they're goofy. Yeah. They are absolutely goofy. And so like seeing how you were able to like make them a little bit more serious is actually really interesting.
That was kind of how we were trying to like ride the line. We were like, mm-hmm. okay, I grew up on the cartoon. That was what I grew up on. I've read the comic since, and I've seen all the other different versions, but that original 87 cartoon, I think. Yes. I'm not sure what year. Yeah.
87. Yeah.
So like growing up on that, it was like, let's take those aesthetics and see if we can modernize them. And so that's partly to finally bring it back to your question. That's kind of how we picked a lot of the characters, was like, who were the ones that I remember having the action figures for and really liking? And I was like, I remember Leatherhead was a character that I really, really liked. We could not do that voice. I did write him going, I did try to write that version, which is the, I guarantee. And they were like, no. Cannot do that, Ryan.
You knock out an entire audience.
Completely the most probably racist character. It's not great. Yeah. So they're like, let's not do that. And I was like, okay. But like figuring that out, and then figuring out who else do we put on. And I really loved the Rock Soldiers. Like I actually, my grandma, when I was a kid, bought me 6 Rock Soldier action figures. And I was like, what? And she was like, well, they didn't have a lot. And I figured you could have a little army. And I was like, that's brilliant. It's like, yeah, I had all these.
Your grandmother was the beginning of army building.
Exactly. I think they just didn't have any what she wanted, and she was going to buy it. So, like, I love the Rock Soldiers, and I'm trying to think of the other ones that were in there. But yeah, it was just like finding the visually ones. Oh, I think Slash is in there, because mm-hmm. Slash was always a really dope looking character. It was really like me just picking characters that I wanted Dan to draw, and the ones that I thought would be like fun and interesting and to see. You know, like I tried to throw everything in there that I'm looking for. And that's the nice thing about being a fan of Dan's art. You just sort of be like, oh, man, what do I want to draw?
Ryan, I mean this as a very sincere compliment. Your writing feels like a kid with every action figure in the world just setting up what scenes he thinks would be cool and then hiring a very professional artist to draw them out. Like, you keep talking about, like, getting your wish list in there, and it's just so clear you're, like, such a deep fan of these franchises, and it shows in all of your work.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I hope so. Like, I think people, there's a term that gets thrown at me a few times, and I know it's meant to be disparaging, but I actually sort of think it's okay, which is that, like, there's a lot of fan service in your stuff. And I said, to a point, I understand what you're meaning, which is that, like, I write towards things that I want to see, and it's because I'm a fan. But I also think that, like, why is it a bad thing to try and give fans what they want? The thing The thing that I try to do, though, is I try to give you what you... So, like, I have my wish list. I have the things I want to see. But I try to weave a story in there that has depth to it and that feels consistent with the story and the themes that I want to play with. I try to figure out a way to sort of blend those two things. And I think if you can do that successfully, hopefully it, because sometimes that's like, it's a way of sort of writing yourself into a corner, and then you can write yourself out of it. So like, I see fan service as stuff that feels unwanted or gets in the way of story, where you're like,
gratuitous.
Like, you know, like, I don't mean to rip on Star Wars or anything like that, but like when they're like, we're going to give Chewie his medal all of a sudden, you're like, what is that? Like, that's a very odd moment. It's not weaved into the story in a way that feels organic and feels like it's thematic and stuff like that. Sorry, JJ. But that's what I think is fan service. When someone puts something that doesn't make any sense, I try really hard to try and make sure that that stuff fits within the world and the rules that we've established.
Right, because Chewie's metal kind of breaks you out of the reality a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Because it's never been set up. It's not actually part of that story. It feels like somebody read a Reddit thing and was like, oh, great, we can throw that in there and people will get a kick out of that.
Who gives a dog man a medal anyway?
That's something I also brought up when we were talking about the mainline Power Rangers book when you were on it as well. This feels like it's fan service, but then because of how you did it, how you woven it together in the story, I almost kind of don't want to call it fan service at the same time. It's just almost just like, you want to see these things, but you're being respectful to the story. It makes sense. It's not just thrown in there just to be thrown in there. So I do want to give you your flowers now that I have you here in front of me.
I appreciate it.
I think Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub have sort of said it in terms of like writing for television, that you want to tell the stories that you would want to see.
Yeah.
And so like, even if you do get quote unquote gratuitous, like you said, you're writing yourself into a corner, you're challenging yourself. And so that builds towards a better story.
Right.
And I think that that's the ultimate product that we got.
Yeah, hopefully.
I also wanted to bring up the turtles in the human form. I don't know if you've seen the reaction online, but I've seen it. And I do have to be honest with you. Like, I got it was a lot of positive feedback, especially from like Black fans. They were ecstatic to see that. So I was also wondering, you know, if you've seen some of the reactions as well. You know, what were your reactions to the reactions?
I don't like to, like, I'm not trying to dodge it, but I will say, like, it wasn't my choice or the idea. I didn't mm-hmm. have a choice either way. When we were originally talking, I remember thinking we should have hologram forms. I didn't say what nationality they would be or stuff. That was something that Dan took on himself, and not to dodge it. Mm-hmm. When I saw it, I was like, great, that makes a lot of sense. They're from Brooklyn. Like that makes a lot of sense. And then I guess when I came down to it, there was so much, anybody who had an issue with it didn't have a good reason for why they had issues with it, mm-hmm. For the most part, or you knew the reason that they had issues with it, if that made sense. Right. And it felt like we kind of like walked this line with it. Anyways, it's a really complicated, we could do a whole hour on this one.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I will say, like, I was very happy with it. And I think the best part about it was there was so many people who were very excited about it. Just very like, that feels cool. I love that representation. I love that thing. And so at the end of the day, I was like, great. I'm glad people enjoyed it and that it felt like it was something that felt consistent and stuff. It's not, I don't like to take full credit for it because I feel like that would be lying, but I'm all very happy about sort of the general reaction to it.
Well, I guess we should say a thank Dan, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
So I actually got to talk to Kevin Eastman as part of like an interview press at C2E2 last year. Ryan, have you got a chance ever since this crossover came out to talk with Kevin? And has he said any good things about the book? Because he seemed like he was like, oh, yeah, what Ryan's doing, that's awesome and great.
Wait, he said my name?
Yeah.
Holy, the turtle father said my name?
Your name out of his mouth.
Yes. So I've met him twice. The first time was at a convention, and I think it was in Portland. I was there, and there was a lot of room, and I was like dancing because there was like so much. I was like, we have so much room in my booth, I can dance around. And the guy looked up and he's like, nice dancing. And I go, oh, hi, Kevin Eastman. That's not how you want to meet your heroes. And then I ran over to him and I said, hey, I just wanted to introduce myself and what a big fan I was. And he was the nicest guy. And he was like, oh, I read it. It was really good. Thank you. And I was like, get out of town. And then the best part was, this is the fun part of the story, was I was in New York last year. Yeah, no, what, 2 years ago when I was writing it. And I was in the middle of writing the Casey Jones story part of the outline for the thing. And Kyle Higgins and I were walking down to get pizza. We walked by this restaurant and sitting out front with his wife was Kevin Eastman. And Kyle kind of knew him and was like, hey. And he goes, hey, Kyle, Ryan, this is good to see you. And he's like, cool. And I was like, hey, do you mind if I sit down with you for like 2 seconds and pitch you what I'm trying to do with Casey? Because Casey's probably my favorite turtle character and I don't want to screw this up. And I'd love, if you think it works, then I'll do it. And if you don't, I won't. And he was like, sure, sit down. And so I pitched him the entire arc with Casey from the beginning to the end of Ranger X and everything. And he got done. He's like, that sounds great. I was like, really? You're not just saying that. He's like, no, man. And then he started telling me a little bit about where the inspiration for Casey Jones came from and how that fit with that thing and the way that he was a little bit of more of a, he saw him as a more of a nihilistic version of the turtle, somebody who had not grown up with a supportive father figure and that idea that he'd be a little more pessimistic, maybe nihilism isn't the right word, but pessimistic. Mm-hmm. And so that he would, the idea that he would sort of willingly put himself in danger to try and to do bad, to do good was kind of a fun way. And it was awesome. He gave me like, it was like a 20-minute conversation of just like walking through and he's like, yeah, that sounds great. You have my blessing. And I was like, awesome. And then we walked away. I was like, well, I'm not hungry for pizza anymore. I want to go write.
So. Yeah. Did he give you some of your food?
No, God, he did offer us wine, but I was like, I gotta go write, bro. That's my Kevin Eastman story. He is as nice as I could possibly. People say don't meet your heroes. Kevin's the exception. Like, he's a super sweet, amazing person, and is just very generous to, and also just like, he did not have to take 20 minutes to talk me through that, and he did, and I really appreciate it.
You're telling me while walking in New York to get pizza, Kevin Eastman blessed your turtles book.
That is correct.
That is the what we call the fatal arithmetic.
That's like a legendary story. You like summoned him. That's amazing.
Pretty nuts.
So we kind of touched on a little bit about this with talking about fan service, but with a crossover like this big, is there ever any worry that melding the two franchises, that you'll run out of ideas. I say this understanding that there's ideas that you have to meld, like the Turtles becoming Rangers and the Zords fusing with the giant turtle robot and like doing Dimension X. These are not things that you have to do, but they're check boxes. Like, it makes sense. Like, if you're going to do this crossover, you're going to do this. But is there ever any worry that you're going to run out of something in that toy box?
I don't know if it's run out. I mean, you could ask me again if we do a third one, and I'm like, I got nothing. but I think it's like, it's what's been fun for me is in every one, like in the first one, the Rangers becoming mutants was an actual thing that was going to happen in that. Mm. And then as I was writing it, I think it was around the second issue, or I was like, there's not enough room. Like, we're not going to have enough room to do this. Like, and I go, and if we do it, it's going to be like a 2-page scene, because, you know, that's something that I've learned as I've written more and more ensembles. I write Rogue Son as well. And Rogue Son is one character, and it's incredible how much space you have for one character. When you write, like, the Turtle Ranger stories are really dense with character beats, because you have all the Rangers, Shredder, Zordon, all the Turtles, Rita. There's 1,000 Bebop, Rocksteady, April, Goldar, all the minions. I'm missing people. Bulk and Skull. Like, you have so many characters that you want to give everybody a moment to. And so sometimes people only get one or two lines. And so I realized really early on, I was like, this idea is too big. Like, can I pull this out? And they're like, how do you want to flip it? I was like, well, we'll make them Ninja Rangers and we'll have the ideas that they won't have any powers and we'll go with stuff, which I thought was really fun. And I really liked that part. But, and I like that we got to move it, because it allowed us to be a bigger part of the story in this one. We could make a 2 or 3 issue thing, and you actually got to see them use those powers, and the idea that Splinter got to go out there and sort of be a mentor for them and stuff like that. I thought that was really fun. And to say the same thing, in this one, originally it was going to be Zed and Shredder as the major two people. It was not going to be Rita and I was going to play with Zed. Actually, I think it was the three of them. It was Rita, Zed, and Krang, and Shredder. It was going to be all of them. And then I realized as I was breaking it, once again, I was like, he doesn't fit. It's like, if we put Zed in this, he's just going to be standing there like, you know, cackling at people. And so I ultimately pulled him out, and then that's why I was like, oh, we can drop him in at the end, and sort of, if we do a third one, we can make it that. So, like, so far, I haven't run out of ideas. I'd put too many ideas into one, and then I usually have to realize I have to pull one out. There's another part that was in this story that I was a major element, and then I pulled that out very late in the game as well. And so I have one of those too. So I still have pieces that are there, but yeah, I don't know if I can turn the Rangers or Turtles into anything else anymore. I've done it 3 times now. That might be.
Bet you can. Okay.
I say that now. You know,
once the kids start going,
you can turn them inside out.
I could. That's disgusting.
I have to say, though, like, when I did find out about the Dino Rangers, like them actually mutating into dinosaurs, I flipped out, because it was such a cool idea. And to see, you know, them do, like, it's mutating time. And just like you said, it's just such a fun toy box. It's like playing with action figures. And I think I speak for me and a lot of listeners and all the guys here. I wish that Hasbro wasn't in a hiatus right now, because those would be some cool figures.
My wallet is thankful. But I will say, like, yeah, of course it makes sense for the Rangers to turn into me. Like, Power Rangers was the same time as Animorphs. Like, how come this didn't happen before? Like,
oh yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it was 100% what I wanted to do. And it was funny, because there was a quick, I mean, this is gonna probably get me in trouble, but it's cool. They were like, the first question, they were like, well, they gotta be turtles, right? I was like, no, they're not gonna be turtles. They're gonna be the things that they call their names out of. They did say there was like a, do you know the gif where of Zach turning into a mastodon? That's like,
yes.
There was a conversation. They're like, is that what we're doing? And I'm like, no, we're going to do something cooler than that. But yeah, like, it was like obvious. I really, it was funny. Like, I remember Daphna, my editor, and if you listen to this, Daphna, you know, I love you, but this was one of those things where, like, we got into like a very long conversation about, like, she's like, so wait a minute. How do they actually turn into the mutants? How do they use the coins and the mutagen? And how do they inject it into themselves? And does it change them? And I was like, I'm not going to show any of that. They're like, what? I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, we're just going to have Billy and Donatello say, we've been thinking about working with these things, and we got a crazy idea, and then we're just going to show them turn into that.
Because, and it might be reversible.
Exactly. Who knows? Maybe not. That was a plot point at one point, was if they, it was going to be a, if you do this, you can't go back. And it was going to be, if you do this, we don't know if you can come back. And so they were like, we're going to do it anyways. And I was like, and that was cool and everything. But I was like, I think with the world being at danger right now, it's like, let's just, like, it felt like a hat on a hat, and I wasn't really going to be able to pay it off in a interesting way. But that was a point. We did talk about whether or not it was going to be like the, if you could become a mutant and you got those powers, would you be okay with, and you can see remnants of that with the last scene when they're all at the table. Yes. And Kimberly's like, I could fly yesterday. And this idea of, like, he would have been the one that was the most nervous about it.
Yeah.
And then what was cool was she was the one who was like, I just want to be a pterodactyl again. You know, every words every high school student should say.
I mean, I think you made the right choice, because it really allowed them to thrive in their kind of mutated form. They got to have some joy that, like, with breathing fire or flying or the saber-toothed tiger leaps. It made me want to be a mutant temporarily also.
Agreed.
So I think that was really sick.
That's a good point. I think that was also part of the conversation, was if they're so nervous about being this forever, are they going to actually enjoy the wish fulfillment of it? And that's a really good point.
But the mutant rangers aren't the only addition in this book. We also got the Dimension X rangers, who are sick as hell. They're amazing.
More action figures.
More. I don't need action figures.
That we'll never get. I didn't finish.
I don't need action figures, but I do need some Goni Montez covers for my wall. Pretty pleased with the Dimension X Rangers. But there was a line where Donnie asked if the Dimension X Morphers came with Zords. Was that ever something that was, like, considered for this book? Or, what, like you said, is this something like too many ideas, maybe later kind of situation?
Yes, it was considered. That line is in there on purpose. That's all I'll say about that.
Okay. Okay. Good enough.
Okay. That answer makes me happy. And I'm also going to say, I am so glad we got the Dragon Turtle Zord in this one.
Yes.
Dragon Turtles are a Dungeons and Dragons monster and one of my favorites. So seeing that as a Megazord just had me hyped like a kid on Saturday eating sugary cereal. So awesome. Thank you for that.
I'm glad. No, that's fun. That was the other, I think, I don't know if I've said the story, but in the original, I think in the original arc, it was an idea. Jason Bischoff, actually, I think it might have been his idea. One of the things he said, it was, he was like, you know, you're using a lot of the Ranger stuff, but it'd be cool to use more of the Turtle stuff. Mm. And I think it's just because I'm just more in tune with the Ranger stuff. And I was like, oh, that's true. And it was his idea to be like, you should use Metalhead. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And I was like, how do we justify that he, well, I'll just drop in something about Donatello created a shrink ray that doesn't work, and then we'll just do that. And because it was just like, that's maybe fan servicey, but I was like, it's fine. No one's going to get mad about it. It'll look cool and be fun. But what was fun was, before that happened, what I originally had was just that the Turtles took over the Dragon Zord. And there was a moment when they were fighting in the city, and there's like a giant banner that's going through the middle between buildings, and they ran through it, and they got across the face, and it was orange. And right before they go into battle, Michelangelo's like, hold on, I got an idea. And they're like, what? And then it would cut to, when he came in, the Dragon Zord with the turtle ninja
bandana.
And they would be fighting, and the whole point, and there was a moment I wrote, there was Donatello and Michelangelo going, they fight, like, the mask plays, like, the mask plays. And I just thought that was super fun. So that's kind of me bringing some version of, like, okay, I got to bring the Dragon Turtles art in there in a more fun way. But yeah, sorry.
Fan artists, get on it.
I really like the implication about Dimension X being this, like, alternative reality, because there's mention that, you know, Krang's like, oh, there's a command center also in Dimension X. And so is that just, like, kind of adding to the multiversal effect of Power Rangers, or just, like, a fun line to throw in?
I think, well, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think we're necessarily saying it's, like, an alternate reality, like, human-wise. Like, I was sort of just looking at it sort of like another area. Because I looked at it as maybe, I know that in some of the Power Ranger comics, we talked about the fact that there might be multiple command centers out there and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually there's a whole run that about them stealing one from another planet. Yeah.
I knew that. I think that was Mac Room's run.
Yeah, Mac Room. Yeah.
Mac Room. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I knew that was in the back of my head. So I was like, because it actually came out of in the first crossover, like Krang knew a lot about the Rangers. Like he actually gave Shredder technology in order to disrupt the morphing. And so I was like, well, how does he know that? And so in my head, I was like, well, maybe he, and I think there's a line he says, they've dealt with the Rangers before. And I was like, okay. And so I just sort of had that line in there. And so I knew when we got Krang into the second one, it was like, oh no, they've killed those Rangers. And that's kind of where the whole, it actually just came out. It was like this weird sort of natural progression. I was like, well, if Krang knows how to defeat the Power Rangers, how does he know that? He must have fought them before. Okay, where would he have done that? He's had to have done it in Dimension X. So if he did it in Dimension X, where are those morphers and what else has he learned? And it was just like this weird progression of like you ask one question, and if you just keep walking down, it ends up giving you a lot of story. And that's where the Dimension X Rangers came from. Was originally what was going to happen was, this is me, I'm just telling you all the bad drafts of stuff like that. Originally, the whole Shadow Morpher thing, that came in really late in the game because they didn't become Turtle Rangers until the fourth issue.
Right.
I'd written the first issue and I was literally writing the second. And I said, they were Turtle Rangers in the first arc. I can't wait 4 issues for them to be Turtle Rangers again. This is wrong. They need an upgrade. We need to come up with an upgrade. And I'd realized as I was working on it, I already had it. I'd already had those morphers that Krang had that he'd studied. And I was like, oh, they can just become the Dimension X morphers because they bring the power source over into that world and it reactivates them. And now they get their own form. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I realized, oh, that's good. Now I can have the Turtles and the Rangers fighting next to each other as Turtle Rangers and regular Rangers. And so that's where it all came from. It was like one of those things, like in my brain, I couldn't justify how they could do that. But then when we got the Shadow Morphing thing, I was like, oh, that's kind of a fun thing. Like it's, that actually works and ended up weirdly working for as giving Shredder this sort of one up in the ending. So it's always fun when you just, like, if you think about it and you just take a step away from the story and think about the world a little bit, you end up usually finding pieces that you've laid already. It's like Legos. It's like half a Lego set. And I'm like, oh, there's pieces over here that I lost. If I just put those together, I got a whole other thing. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah.
No, absolutely.
It makes perfect sense. I'm building 2 giant Lego sets right now, so I get it.
Awesome. So yeah. I saw a complete non sequitur. I saw that Lego put out the plans for like all of their Lego designs online. So you can literally, like, if you have, like, a giant box of just random Legos, you can make, a Millennium Falcon out of random pieces.
Yes.
Now I kind of want to go on there and just find the plan. That might be illegal, so I apologize, Lego. Please don't get mad at me.
I think as long as you don't sell them, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Getting back on topic, I don't think anybody was mad about seeing more Turtle Rangers, you know, right. Seeing them in, like, with the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers suits. I do have a question about that scene, though, because there is like a single panel, and I sent it in the group chat to everyone else. I was like, does Billy have a Gyrtlinger? Where Billy has this Triceratops gun that is clearly in homage to Zenkaiser, the Sentai. And I was wondering, is that something that was in the script, or is that Dan Mora just kind of giving like a little sneaky wink?
That was Dan. That was totally. I asked him what it was. I was like, what is this? He's like, isn't that cool? I was like, thanks, man. Yeah, he does that all the time.
He's like, they'll know.
Yeah, he's a fan and he knows his stuff.
I think you kind of answered this, but Latch at Bliss Talk 1 said, did Dan pick also what monsters to draw, like in the background? Did he have any choice in the extra monsters?
No, I actually picked those. Those are me, yeah. Well, I mean, okay. So that's why. I picked the ones that I wanted, and then I said, whatever ones are left, you pick. Like, I was like, these are the ones that I want to use. And then you can fill in the rest, yeah. So it was a combo thing.
And then he just had a comment, we need Dimension X Rangers as toys. And yeah, I totally agree.
Hasbro.
What are you going to do? This crossover benefits from like very specific pairings throughout. Billy with Donatello and Raph with Tommy and such. Can you talk about like what pairing you felt was really surprising to write? And is there a pairing that you wish you did, but you didn't get to do it?
I tried to make an effort and I don't know if I succeeded because I'm trying to remember, but like I knew like in the first run, the pairings were pretty easy. Like Leo and Jason seemed pretty obvious and Michelangelo and Zach seems just that those guys just can talk for hours and Donatello Billy. But the one that was surprising to me was the Raphael Trini story. Like, I really enjoyed the two of them together.
Yeah.
Because, like, it was just such an interesting... It was neat to put a character that is somebody who hides their feelings. I think Raphael feels the most, but expresses the least. And the idea that he would be around somebody who is very empathetic, which is, I think, what Trini's superpower is her sort of ability to sort of sense what someone else is feeling. Mm-hmm. Like, having those two together, like, you get some really interesting, deeper conversations without... Raphael, like, you know, talking about himself, she can sort of tear him down quietly. That's where a lot of the theme of the, like, the conversations about the theme were in with those two people, which I didn't expect. What was fun though is, but because Tommy was so far away on his own mission in the first run, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try and bring him in here to try and make that more fun. So that's why I was like, let's put Raphael and Tommy together, because those two, they are so alike but don't want to admit that they're alike. I thought it was kind of fun. Those are always fun characters to put together, who, like, both people who, like, rub each other the wrong way because that's them. I didn't get a chance to do any Zordon Splinter stuff in the first run, so I was really happy to be able to do... Yes.
Really nice to see that here.
Thank you. Yeah, that one little chess scene where they could talk about what it's like to... I think that's such a fun thing too, right? It's like, they're so similar, and the idea that, like, they would both have very strong feelings about their kids, in essence. Like, Zordon, those are his children. Obviously, those are Splinter's sons. And so the idea that, like, the concept that they would both be forced to put the people they love into harm's way over and over and over again for the sake of the world, and how that would weigh on them, never knowing... I thought that was something that was I wanted to make sure that I could put that in the story.
It's a very specific conversation that really only those two characters can have.
Exactly, yeah.
That was one of my favorite parts of the book, seeing that.
And then, weirdly enough, I enjoyed April Bulk and Skull stuff. I thought that was kind of fun. Yeah, like,
that was great.
Of all the, because it was like, it was funny because I remember thinking, like, what am I going to do with Bulk and Skull? And I'm like, they literally are my reporters.
Right.
With their YouTube channel. Yeah. And I was like, oh, they've got to be with April. It worked out really well. I will say, I fan serviced the hell out of, and my checklist at the beginning, it was like, Bulk and Skull have to meet Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I had to come up with a way to do that. And I was happy to actually be able to get them. And I love that their whole pitch was like, we're going to make you famous. And they're like, no, they make a good point. And I thought that was like a fun kind of thing. Like, that ultimately ends up saving the day, because they were able to get, there's one I did it. I think it was Mighty Morphin. It might've been Power Rangers. I can't remember. It was one where Bulk's interviews Opram about, like, the end of the world. It's an interview with our alien overlords, you know? It's like, I thought that was... And so I was like, I want to do an interview with Bulk and Skull talking to Bebop and Rocksteady. And I just thought that was super fun. So, like, those are the pairings that I really enjoyed.
Do you think that Bulk and Skull feel that Bebop and Rocksteady are more stable or less stable versions of Babu and Squat?
They're probably more... I think they're probably a little more stable. Actually, no, here, they're tougher but dumber. I think that's probably...
Yeah, tougher but dumber.
I don't think Goldar's stupid. I think Goldar...
No,
I think Goldar has some real ego issues because he keeps losing and he doesn't know how to rationalize that in his head. And I think Squat, to me, is not evil at all. Squat is a guy who just really, really wants Rita to be happy and like him. And that's my opinion. I know that's not the question, but that's my answer for that. So I could talk minions all day. I love those four. That's my favorite thing that I was able to do in Go-Go was hopefully give... I have my favorite line of all time. This is the moment when Squat goes with Rita to her where she was born, and he was like walking by, and he goes, oh, look, the baby prison. And that's a crib. I thought that was the best line I've ever written in my life. Sorry. Nothing to do with Turtles Rangers, just talking.
We had a ton of listener questions. Like, a lot of people want a third series, and also to say hi to you. I want to give shout outs because there were people that had questions so specific. We legally can't give you ideas for a next series.
Oh yeah.
So I do want to quickly shout out to our listeners, Andy at 7 Foot Metalhead, Donnell at Donnell Do, Artsy Camera Guy, and Phoenician Tact for giving some really great specific ideas for a third series that Ryan cannot legally see.
I appreciate you protecting me.
Please delete them so there's no evidence.
What questions?
But also we got Rosano Smith at Smithsona, who said, can you just tell Ryan I said hi? Mostly Speaking Sentai at MSS Pod said, no questions. I read it in a single sitting on an Amtrak and loved every bit of it. I relate to this panel a lot too. And it's the panel where Mikey says, sorry. And Donnie says, we joke when we're upset. And then Mikey says, it's a defense mechanism.
That's just the way you get more humor in a book. But I totally joke when I'm upset. So like, yeah, it's a defense mechanism. I like that.
J-Man DX says, ask him if he likes turtles.
I feel like I should be in zombie makeup. Yeah. That's a deep cut. Sorry, yes. Yes, I do. I like turtles. Yeah. I had one when I was a kid. We just didn't know how to feed it. And I think it died of starvation, sadly. Sad story. That's what you get when you ask that question.
Johnny at Johnny underscore Moreo says, do you believe Splinter would make a great Ranger, like kind of like Shadow Ranger vibes?
No comment.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Of course he would. He'd make a fabulous Ranger.
Absolutely. So there's been a lot of talk about Casey being pink.
Isn't he like maroon, isn't he?
He looks magenta, but I'm also
it's a magenta.
It's a magenta slash pink.
Kind of that color?
Yeah, that one. That one right there. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why people are asking about it so much because all the rest of the morphers, like it's right there. But Cosmic Ranger asked, is Casey pink? Is Casey the pink Dimension X Ranger? And is April the yellow Dimension X Ranger? Or is she using Mikey's orange morpher at the end of the story?
Getting into some tough territory here because I don't want to. I will say that. Okay, I'm going to say this. But if I choose to change my mind at a later date.
Okay.
Then future Ryan is overruling present day Ryan.
Got it.
I think the morphers. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out a way to not get in trouble. I think the morphers can adjust to the colors of the people that want them to be. Just because they were a specific color doesn't necessarily mean that's the color they're going to be. If I had maybe had my way, would those morphers have been one color and not specifically colors from anybody? Maybe, but I can neither confirm or deny that. But I will say this. I think I liked it better that she's just yellow. Like if you think of April on that TV show, like she was in a yellow jumpsuit all the time. Exactly. And it made sense to make her the yellow Dimension X Ranger. And so that means that the rules are malleable right now when it comes to the Dimension X Rangers. I promise they make sense. We have talked about them at length, but it's one of those things you can't get into in the book. If we do a third one down the line, I definitely, the Dimension X Rangers and how those work and what that all is will obviously probably play a part in some version of that. So if it frustrates you that I feel like I'm bending the rules, I promise the rules have been talked about. I just don't, if I tell you about some of those things, it gives away things and it might lock me into things that I won't be able to do. And that's I probably already said too much.
Follow up question. Right. Will you ever advocate for a hardcover of the book?
Absolutely.
With, as at the end of the hardcover, a dictionary of all the rules.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. Because that means I got to write that and that's going to take time. So I'm lazy, man.
Yeah, no, I get no.
This is kind of a fun question. The morph call Power Up, Power Extreme. Bliss Talk 1 asks, was the morphin call Power Extreme an Easter egg for the Centurions?
And I'm a big Centurion fan, honestly. I hope I didn't steal that. No, I don't think so. No. Power Extreme. Oh, God, they did say that, didn't they? Shoot. No. Like I had the first part, so it's mine. I think I just... I like this. I like every Power Ranger group has to have a call sign and a thing. Yeah. And he's called Ranger X. It made sense. You can't do I'm not doing the below the waist one because that's a whole nother book. So it just seemed like I like that thing. Like it's whenever you can try and implement elements from the, like, you know, like, look, we're Power Ranger fans. Like mm-hmm. Power Rangers have a very set structure to, you know, not everything's the same, but they all have those characteristics. And it just, whenever I can try and work them in the best I can into the comic, I try to. They have the call outs when they morph and they have the certain poses and stuff like that. So it just seemed like trying to figure out that the extreme and the X and these Ranger X, it all kind of seemed like it worked the best way. So that's probably where that came from. But I am a big Centurion fan and Mask. I like Mask a lot too.
Oh yeah, I'm a huge Mask fan. My dad had like all the toys back in the day. He collected all that. We had the Boulder Hill playset. I mean, it was
Oh my god, you had that was expensive, dude. Well done.
Yeah. It was more my dad's than mine, but he
just really
played with it. Yeah.
Raised you right.
Yeah, I mean, I got all my collecting from him.
I was wondering, so just stepping away from canon, stepping away from calling it a part three, if there was a chance to write another Ranger TMNT crossover with a different team of Rangers, what team would you think would have the best, like, interesting interactions with the Turtles? Because obviously, MMPR and In Space have done it. Is there anyone else, like, in your this magical fantasy world where you get any that you want?
Dino MMPR has, not Ninja.
Okay, yeah, Dino M.
Just putting that out there.
Ninja is an option. Thank you, Ben.
Objection, leading the witness. I mean, there's a lot of them that would be, there's another one where I don't want to get in trouble. I think, you know, there's fun ones. Like, you've got ninjas. The Power Rangers became ninjas. They have the ninja powers at some point. Like, that seems kind of like they would fit in some world there. Wouldn't that be
something? I led the witness.
You led the witness.
Led the witness, but it's a good answer.
But that's the same team. Well, that's kind of the same team, because then I get Aisha and Rocky and right. Adam in there. But it seems like that's cheating, because it's like, let's pick one that you haven't written, right? I guess, like, Dino Charge would be, I think, would be kind of fun. I think maybe.
Oh, that would be super fun.
Yeah, cool. That would be kind of interesting. To be fair, you could literally do this all day. I think you could do so. Yeah. Oh, you know, wait, Time Force, and then do Turtles in Time. Just do that. Like, do that.
Oh my gosh! Yep. Oh,
there it is.
There you go.
Stop the podcast, everyone. We got there. That's cool. Amazing.
Okay. Another fun one. Bo Harper at Zio Ranger 7 Brown asks, if you could do a crossover with an 80s cartoon with Power Rangers, what would it be? Thundercats, He-Man, etc.
Turbo Team.
With Mighty Morphin, yes, or Turtles?
Yeah, with Mighty Morphin.
Mighty Morphin? I mean, look, the one we've all wanted to see that I can't talk about, like, I can't, I mean, this suggests I know something I don't, but like, it just seems like Transformers Power Ranger crossover is just like asking to be done at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just so easily play with. I can't say any more than that. I just get me in trouble. Like, I just like, these are the things where, like, if I end up writing one of these down the line, you guys are going to be like, he knew. And it's like, but the joke answer I always say is Saved by the Bell. The idea of like trying to figure out which Saved by the Bell characters get what color is my favorite part. Because it's like, if there's the obvious ones, but then you're like, oh, like, what color is Jessie? Is she yellow? Is she pink? Who knows? Anyways, so that's my bull answer. But like, there's some fun ones, I think. But like,
what about Street Sharks?
Street Sharks? My Biker Mice from Mars? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Melissa's doing Biker
Mice. She is doing that one. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Not the crossover, just the comic. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Dude, I was at C2E2 when she was like, I saw the announcement. I'm like, how many comic books are you writing right now? Like, yeah, I got a whole universe, man. Look at me. It's like, geez, you run everything.
If anything, you're writing this. What frustrated you the most with trying to figure out?
If there was something that frustrated me, it was, I wish I had more space every time. Like, I wish that I have a bad habit of writing to an action sequence and then the action sequence only being like 3-4. Because here's the thing, like, you write it out and then the problem that you run into is like, the minute you have to start condensing pages, the action is the first thing to go because that's the easiest thing to do, right? And so there's a bunch of action stuff that I wish I had ideas for that I wasn't really able to implement in the series. And so you find yourself having to sort of like take that all down to like a moment or a beat. That's a writing frustration. Without getting into specifics of it, because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. The licensors are awesome and have given us a lot of freedom and a lot of stuff. It is hard to do a book with two licensors who both have very strong opinions about their characters and what they want things to be done and how it's orchestrated. And there's always going to be things that you want to do that are great for the story, but might not necessarily be best for the brand. I can't get into specifics on that stuff, but like, and here's like, I'm making it sound more epic than it was. These are little things. Like, it's a thing where you wrote a scene and you have a joke or a line and someone's like, that's not something that our characters do. And so you have to change that joke. And then as a writer, you're like, how dare you? So like, there's that element. But like, I think that's the hardest part is like, these are franchises that are very big, have a lot of loyal fans, and it can get a little frustrating when you're trying to do something really, you might want to try to do something risky or different with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, these are crossovers that are sort of, not to say they're non-canon, but they are not part of the, you have to earn major changes and adjustments and stuff. Like, I will say, like, I think I've said this out loud. I don't know. There was a very different version of this story in my initial pitch. My initial pitch was more of a Days of Future Past kind of thing. Yeah, it was a very, I think I've said this, if I haven't, like I had this idea that I did not want to structurally do anything similar to the first arc. I was like, okay, if we're doing this, we're doing it totally different. We're going to do something different and it's going to use the different time frames. And I had this idea and I pitched it and wrote the whole thing out and I got a call and they were like, this is cool. This is not what I think people want out of, they basically were sort of like, we want the tone and energy of the first one. Like we want that, like we want that same style. And what you're doing here is very dark. The theme of that one, without going into the pitch of it, was like letting go of the things you cannot change. So it was going to be like it was going to take advantage of sort of like people were going to die. Like I was going to kill people. And it was like, I think they were just like, yeah, appreciate what you're trying to do here. Maybe we dial it back a little bit. How about more action figures? Like they didn't say that, but like that was kind of the idea. So we kind of took a big step back and rethought everything. There's some pieces in here and stuff like that, but like I think that's probably not a frustration, but my, and to be fair, they probably were right. I think at the end of the day, had I written that story, I think everybody would have been like, damn, man, like doing like Last Ronin stuff here. Like I think that might have been, I think maybe that was probably why it was right around the time Last Ronin was really fair. And I think that was probably why they were like, we got that. We don't need two of those. And so that was the inspection of like of doing that. And also to be fair, like you know, we've done post-apocalyptic, I'm not even saying post-apocalyptic. We've done dark versions of the Power Ranger stuff with the Draken universe and all stuff. So I think they just felt like what I was aiming for was just sort of weird, darker turn thing that I really wanted to spin. So that was probably one thing where I ultimately they probably led me. You know, people always say, oh, you get notes and they never let you do what you want to do. Sometimes the notes keep you from making a mistake. So
yeah,
it's true. One last question for me, because I love like whenever they collect these editions and get to see all the amazing concept art by Dan Mora, who's just I think done all the concept art for Rangers for the past 5 years or something. Like even on books, he's not the artist for, he'll do like all the concept stuff. But specifically for this series, how much of that was like your direction versus his? Was it kind of like a 50-50? Like you had somewhere that you wanted to be and he visualized it for you?
Yeah, I think he hit the Mutant Rangers with one swing. Like he was like, he did one drawing of the Mutant Rangers and I was like, yep, we're good. I was like, maybe add a belt and we're good. And that was it. That was nice. The Dimension X Rangers, Ranger X took a while. Say Ranger X took a long time because we were still trying to figure out like kind of what we wanted it to look like. And I was like, at one point I was like, are you actually going to pretend? Like, and so here's the thing. At one point we're like, how much of a meal do we want to make out of who is Ranger X? And if we did, so there's that weird balance of like, okay, we could make Ranger X completely his own character so you wouldn't know it was Casey. But if we do that, now we're not actually taking advantage of the fact that we're getting to make Casey Jones into an actual Ranger. So you have that weird, you see what I'm saying? Like there's a weird balance there where it's like, it's cool, but it doesn't look like Casey and he's not using the weapons and it could be anybody. So really quickly, I was like, we should just like, I'm going to reveal that it's Casey in the first issue. So we don't have to do that. And so we can go with more of a cooler. I wanted the broken helmet and the hair hanging out and the pads and sort of that 80s like spike stuff and all that stuff. Like we were like playing with that. And some of that was from, you know, that came from Dan, that came from like, I'm probably going to be a lot of Ranger X design stuff in there. So that one took a little while to go. But the good news was once we figured out the Ranger X stuff, then we had a base with which we were like, okay, the Dimension X Rangers are going to run off of that. So that made it a little easier. I don't think it was too hard with Dimension X. I think we did like two passes and it was more like, oh, I think the biggest note I had was like, I liked the idea. I loved it with Simone DiMio's Turtle Rangers. I love when we figured out that the Ranger Shield could be basically implemented into the shells of the turtles. We're like, oh, that's awesome. I was like, let's do the same thing with the silver on this. So we have that same thing. Cause I think the shells kind of give you that stuff. So when we knew that we had the shoulder pad and all that stuff like that, was like, it was kind of figuring out that way. And then all the weapons, I think he did in one pass too. Like Dan's really good. And Dan has a great aesthetic and it's super fun. And that part's fun. Like it's that first time you get like the first drawings, it's like, whoa, like I'm working on a series right now where we got the first round of concept art. And I was like, I'm like, oh, this is going to be so easy. The artist just nailed it. And so like, that's really fun. But yeah, this one was, there was a lot. I remember the other one I loved was when he did the Krang as the Zord. Like, I was like, that was kind of a joke. We were like, does he take over the Megazord? And I was like, yeah, he should. He should take over the Megazord. Totally do that. I think it was Daphne's idea. She's like, that'd be cool. And I was like, yeah, because it got Krang out of the having to like it got Krang in the fight a little bit, which I liked, because, and that gave me the ending. When I realized that Krang was going to be the villain and he was going to take over the Megazord, I was like, well, then now we got to have Shredder take over, use the Dragon Zord to jack him up. That was the part where I was like, that's what I, because then that was it. It was like, had he not kind of kicked Shredder to the curb, who knows what would have happened, because there's no way they probably would have won. So pettiness gets you every time.
Yeah.
I do have like one actually fun question. I actually want to wonder, like, when working with Dan, like, kind of like, what's the process like? Because both of you guys have very fun and crazy ideas. So I'm like, how much time is spent just like of you two bouncing ideas off of each other versus like, okay, we need to sit down and like put this stuff on paper?
Yeah. Well, the fun part for him is, so like, I've been at conventions with him 3 or 4 times, and every convention I'm at, I sit down with him like, okay, like when we were doing Go-Go, I think I sat down with him and I was like, is there anything you want to draw? He's like, oh, I like draw everything. I'm like, I know you like to draw everything, Dan, but I know you gotta like to draw some things more than other things, right? Because I know when we give you a script, I know what pages come in first. So I know there's things that you like because you're not drawing it in order. And so some of that is like Dan, like going, I like this and I like that. And also if you start looking at the stuff that he does, like you can start to see little trends. So I think it's kind of like a little bit of like a match of ping pong where it's like, we'll have conceptual ideas and we'll send him like when we first start working on the idea. So I'll turn an outline in, right? Like a 5 or 6 page outline, depending on how long the miniseries is. And in that, I'll basically like circle all the things that we need concept art for. And we'll just send that to Dan and basically be like, okay, I'll send him a concept art. We're like, maybe a little bit of reference, but we just sort of let him run with it. And then he'll usually send us back 1 or 2 versions of it. And then I'll kind of like look at it. And sometimes it gives me a new idea. Sometimes I'm like, okay, that's not what we're thinking. Mm-hmm. What if we, like, I think one of the things I remember was when he sent back the Krang Zord, Dino Krang, I was like, oh, no. Like, it looks too clean. Let's break the arm down. Let's corrupt it. Make it look like he's been like, yeah, like he's been taking pieces apart and like working on time. And that just came from just like, it needs to look a little different. And that was a part of it. And then when he put the Mutant Rangers, I saw the belts and I was like, okay, so they're going to inject themselves with it, like a serum. And there was like a serum thing. So like Dan takes little details and like runs with them and those will come plot points. So sometimes it's usually the stuff that I send him is stuff that comes from, we mapped it all out.
Okay.
But for the most part, what happens is like when we give it to him and the stuff he gives back, that is usually, if you look at the details and the really specific stuff, I usually use that. I'm like, okay, it becomes sort of plot point and you find ways to do that. So
cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
At the time of this episode's release, you can find MMPR and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 softcover collection available now. Ryan, I know we kind of mentioned this on Morphin Masters, but for anyone who hasn't listened to that one yet, and you definitely should, do you have any upcoming conventions or any projects that you want to talk about?
No conventions at the present time. If Los Angeles isn't completely swept away by the rain, I'm sure I'll be doing WonderCon. That's all I've got. I think I might be at C2E2 this year. I don't know about New York. We'll see. I'm working a little harder this year, so it's harder for me to. I always say I'm going to work at conventions, and I don't, and I just end up drinking. It's just not gonna like, why are your books not done? Well, I was in Chicago, and you got to go get some deep dish. I do have a new book. I have a new book coming out on February 14th, Valentine's Day, called The Infernals. Which, for anybody who hasn't heard it yet, it's very, very simple. The Antichrist is dying of cancer, and has to decide which of his 3 terrible children is going to lead the apocalypse to. Absolutely Power Ranger turtle centric, as you can tell from that pitch.
Yes.
So, perfect flavor. But it's like a dark sort of succession-y supernatural thing that we're playing with. A lot of fun. Not for kids, but a lot of fun. And then Rogue Sun, I think, is out. Rogue Sun 18 is out
tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. And then we're taking a little bit of a break That doesn't necessarily mean, like, when I say break, we're not like stopping the book. We're just, we have some other stuff that's coming out and we don't want to, here's the thing. We don't want to overpower your wallet for you got to buy four things in one weekend. So we're spreading it out a little bit and giving us a little more time. So 19, I think, comes out in May, and then we're still going strong. We're not, there's no plans to stop it anytime soon. So.
Absolutely. Ryan, thank you so much for being on the show. This was an absolute blast. And I also got to thank Tyler, Ben, and Ro. We got the Comic Squadron together for this one, and this is a lot of fun. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, man. This is fun.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphin Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at Ranger Command PH. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at Ranger Command Power Hour. Ranger Command is also on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/rangercommandph to learn more. Thanks for listening.